Session off today with a question.
Okay.
Is Hideo Kojima kind of a hack?
I don't know if I'd call him a hack.
I don't know if I would either. But
my feelings about Hideo Kojima is that he doesn't know what he is. He doesn't know what he wants. I know he has that thing where he says he's like made up of movies or something, or like
right,
a certain percentage of his body is made of movies, which fine, whatever. He loves movies, but he's a game maker and he's a game designer. So I feel like the truth is, I think it's just proof that no matter how successful you are, you're always torn about what you're doing.
Yeah. Like, I think like, that's fair.
Like the dude has made one of the most memorable and successful video game franchises of all time. Of course, he's been removed from it because of Konami and
right,
whatever
yeah.
happened, but still he created Metal Gear Solid, which is a fantastic series overall, and he's still like, I haven't done what I want to do,
right?
I need to make movies. And so I'm just I don't know,
he already made a movie because Metal Gear Solid 4 exists.
Yeah, well, and then Death Stranding is all, it's like got 8 hours of cutscenes in Death Stranding. He made 4 movies.
Has someone told Hideo Kojima that if he makes a movie, it can't be 8 hours long?
Well, and that it can't have any of the things that made his game so special, which were the intermingling of the game with the cinematic experience, right?
Like, right, yeah.
The most memorable shit from Metal Gear Solid is when Psycho Mantis reads your memory card.
Yeah.
Or your controller ports don't work. It's not watching someone do the thing they do.
Yeah, it's interactive, like, meta-narrative things that don't work in other mediums.
Right, or even just the silly shit in 4 where Snake and Ocelot are punching each other and then they're injecting each other and you have to press the button to do it. Like, it just makes it that much sillier.
Yeah.
Right? It's not watching the thing happen. In fact, Death Stranding's story is my least favorite of Kojima's work. It was just kind of like, whatever. I don't know. And it's what's sad to me is, I guess he was really sick sometime during COVID.
Mm.
And he thought he was going to be done with games.
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, like he was like, I think he was hospitalized and all this stuff. And he was like, I'm out. I'm just done. And he was sad because he wanted to make movies. And I guess Guillermo del Toro messaged him because, you know, uh-huh. they're buddies, they're pals.
Right.
He's like, Hideo, you are making movies. What you do is making movies. And apparently this inspired him to then
to
be like, yes.
To continue making games as movies?
Well, and then to say things like, I'm making movies, or like, I'm going to make my next game a movie, even though you have people all around him telling him, dude, you're good. Chill the fuck out. And he's like, no, I must fulfill this thing that I'm doing that I haven't done yet that I've been doing for 30 years.
So, like, obviously, hack is a strong word, and I don't really mean that, because I generally think that, like, what Kojima does is really incredible, and some of the layers of what he does in his narratives are really, really effective.
Yeah.
But some of it is like the S in strand stands for strand. I don't know if that's what he actually said or if that's just a running joke. Like, sometimes the jokes about his games and the things that he's actually said about his games run together, and I don't know which is which. So I don't know if that's a thing that he actually said, but it sounds like him, right? I know that when asked what genre Death Stranding was, he said it was a strand game.
Yeah, no, the guy is already crossed over into Lucas territory where he needs someone to tell him to stop.
Yes.
But no one can tell him to stop because...
But then there's like when I think of a hack when it comes to like the hackiest hack when it comes to video game writing,
uh-huh.
like David Cage is the king of the video game hacks.
That's why I'm saying I would never use that word to describe
right,
Hideo.
Right. Kojima. They're in completely, like, they're in completely different fields because they are both completely up their own asses.
Absolutely.
But but
multiple times.
Kojima's actually good.
Yeah, and he's made some really awesome stuff. And I think the weird part, I guess I just can't get over his whole, you're never going to believe that I'm making a movie game and that you won't even tell your, like, your mom's going to walk in on you and she's going to think you're watching a movie. I'm like, what the, who is this for? Like, I don't know who gets excited when they see that or read that or hear that. Like, I'm not excited. If I wanted to watch a movie, I'll go watch a movie. Like, you just mean it has better graphics? Is that what you're saying?
Well, and just before we started the podcast, we were talking in Discord about how Nintendo and, well, you said Nintendo, but it also carries over to like Telltale and Atlas and some other companies. They get really mad about people streaming their games because they're like, you're taking away our sales.
Yes.
And because people won't play these games because they're watching other people play the games and then they won't buy them themselves. And it's like, yeah. Well, that all really depends on like, are you making a game that is fun to play, or are you making a cinematic experience that you like that interfaces with a controller?
Sure.
Because if you're making a cinematic experience and that's the main, like if you're making a movie, if you're making a, you know, something that is more interesting to watch than it is to control, then yeah, people will get most of the experience that you intend just by watching someone else play it, mm-hmm. because that's how you've designed it. But if you make a game that is fun to play, then people will watch other people having fun playing it and then be like, I also want to play it, because that's what a video game is.
Yeah, well, and then sometimes it even goes where you want to share with other people, because arguably, like Undertale, if you want someone to play Undertale, you don't have to play it yourself, but a lot of people wanted to still play it themselves or share it with other people.
Make different decisions, yeah. Like sort of take their own route to it. Like Undertale's special because it has so much stuff that you can discover.
True, true.
And so if you have any inkling of like, hey, what happens if I do this or what happens if I do that, then you're kind of driven to try that out yourself.
Mm-hmm. But it's still kind of a cinematic experience in it, like an RPG in general, right?
It's very story-driven.
But yeah, so that's sort of true with most RPGs, I think. But it doesn't... The whole idea of watching something taking away from your sales of a game is confusing to me as a whole, because people watch a movie and then they buy the movie. Like, it's not on... Right, like it's not like it's a weird thing to hear a song on the radio. I mean, I guess music's different, but I think a movie's a decent example where you saw a movie and then you're like, "Well, I can't wait to own this so I can watch it again."
Yeah.
So playing a video game, I think it only helps. I mean, look at Pal World, look at Helldivers 2. No one would have given a crap about Helldivers 2 or Pal World if people weren't talking about them and playing them.
Right. Yeah, the discourse only helps. And then what happens increasingly is that a game comes out and there's a bunch of people who don't know what it is, who then see what it is, and then are like, oh, that looks fun. I want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I do think that when you have something like a Last of Us Part 2, then there is a certain degree of like, I want to know what happens, but I don't really want to play it because like the gameplay is kind of samey, whatever.
It's not for you, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I do think that the story is good. Or, like, every Telltale game.
And, like, I mean, Telltale games are autopilot. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually like some of the Telltale stories.
Yeah,
more
the
than
Borderlands
most,
one was great.
Yeah.
I really like the Borderlands one a lot.
I actually really like the Batman one.
Oh, yeah, the Batman ones were good, yep.
But I never bought any of them. I experienced those exclusively through watching other people play them.
Sure, yeah.
Because that was basically the whole experience.
And I think that's an interesting caveat, too, because I don't like watching Let's Plays, well, unless it's you playing it. I don't watch anyone else play games. Like, you talk about the, I can't even think of their name, Wooly? Is that
Wooly,
it?
Well, yeah, Wooly and Pat.
Yeah,
Formerly of Best Friends Play.
Yeah, yeah. So I've never watched anyone do a Let's Play of a game ever in my life. except if for maybe 5 or 6 minutes or something like
that.
Well,
yeah, and you say except for me, but you're not watching. Like, in that case, you're watching because we're friends, not because you want to watch a Let's Play.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, when you're playing Yakuza, I just open the stream and then mute it.
Right.
Because I want to play that for myself.
Which is fair. You'd want to not be spoiled.
But games like that, I played the Telltale games because a lot of people talked about it and a lot of people were, you know, playing them and they were popping up. And I was like, well, all right, I want to see this game. So even though you could have an experience like you where you're like, well, forget it, I'm not going to buy this game. You can have something like me where just because it's being talked about now, I bought it. Right. So it kind of evens out. And I feel like always goes in the favor of the game itself.
Whereas, like, if people hadn't seen it and hadn't talked about it, you wouldn't have known about it, so you wouldn't have bought it.
Right, yeah.
And, like, for me, like, I tend to be fairly stingy with my game purchases, so, like, if, like, I was probably at a point where it's like, I am not going to play this at all, but I am interested enough where, like, if the people that I follow and enjoy watching are playing it, I'll watch them play it.
Yeah, like they didn't lose any money from you because you weren't going to buy it anyways.
Right. Which is kind of like, this is kind of close to the piracy argument that went around like 10, 15 years ago.
Sure.
Where it was like, oh, piracy isn't taking away from sales because the people who are pirating the games weren't going to buy the game in the first place. Which is largely true. But not entirely true.
Yeah, I think that one's a much slipperier slope, because the truth is a lot of those people would have maybe bought it for $5 or $10 or $15 when it was on sale, fair. Right? Hey, speaking of, I did see the Yakuza games on PC at least for like the Like a Dragon Ultimate Edition was only like $15. I'd never seen it that low.
Oh, really?
We just talked about how it was never on sale. And Ashin was 50% off, so maybe they've decided it's okay to... Like a Dragon can now go on to super deep sales because the second one's out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
It's now like one game old, so it's like, okay, now we can put this on super discount to get to, so that you can catch up.
Yeah, right. So the people that are like, well, I want to play it, but I don't want to pay that much now. Now
that's
it's
nice.
It's your time to shine.
Have you already bought it?
No, I don't own it. I see no reason to buy it until I'm even remotely close.
You're like two games back. You're still in five, right?
No, we finished five. We started six, but not really. We basically just played it for like 3 hours. And I was like, you know what? I don't feel like playing Yakuza right now. And
that's
she's
fair.
Like, yeah, I don't feel like playing Yakuza either right now. So we played
Paper
Mario.
I'm excited that you're at six, though.
Yeah, yeah. Moving along.
Like, you're almost at the big shift.
Yeah, it depends on if we're going to play the Judgment games. Because then that adds like that's like a year buffer then.
Yeah, that does add a lot. That's interesting too, because like Lost Judgment takes place between Like a Dragon and Infinite Wealth.
Yeah.
And like while the games are not directly tied to each other, there are, shall we say, like global events. Not global, but like there are events in the setting, because they both take place in, like, Kamurocho and Ijinsho and stuff. And there's, like, big stuff that happens in the game to, like, the organizations and stuff that do affect the sort of overall setting of Lost Judgment.
My feeling is that we'll probably just play them in the order that they were released at this point.
That makes sense, because it feels like that's intended. Like, Lost Judgment feels like it picks up right from the end of Like a Dragon, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the characters aren't there, and it doesn't really, like, it doesn't really connect directly, but the stuff that happened in Like a Dragon is referenced directly in Lost Judgment to sort of create the setting. I can't explain it any more detailed than that.
No, that's great, yeah. I mean, nothing I like more than a wink and a nod to something else, right? Like,
you'll know what I mean when you get there.
You get the elbow nudge and you're like, oh yeah, no, I get it. And that's fun to have. I would be sad if I missed out on that. But yeah, I think the weird, when, you know, thinking back about Hideo is when he was during the PlayStation Direct and they were talking about Death Stranding 2 for like 20 minutes or like 50% of the PlayStation Now games talk direct, whatever they call it. I don't even remember.
State of Play.
State of Play, that's what it is, yeah. I the whole time I was like, man, I just don't care about Death Stranding at all. Like, I wasn't excited. I was like, yeah, I should be looking at these designs and the things that's happening, be like, oh, that's fun. That's classic. Classic Kojima. But I was just like, eh, whatever. And then the big reveal is, oh, we're going to be working on another game in 5 years. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, who cares?
I really, like, it's cool that he announced a lot of stuff. And I think he's cool because the general, like, auteur sensibility that he takes to game development, I think, is rare.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can't make it work the way that he does.
Correct, yeah. No one else could have released Death Stranding where I didn't care about the story and I was just basically a delivery man. And I was like, I am having so much fun being a delivery man.
Yeah.
No one else could have made that work, I feel like.
But, like, the only difference is that, like, Kojima's always so far up his own ass because he makes a bunch of stuff, some of which is prophetic, but, like, it is weird and interesting and intriguing enough where, like, it actually gets people in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it actually gets us interested and we're like, we actually care what he has to say. Here, mm-hmm. instead of, like, and so that gives him license to do some of the most cringy, eye-rolly stuff imaginable. And it's like, we're all right up his ass with him, and he's like, well, if you think about it, you know, me having my head this far up my ass is really metaphorical for the cycle of humanity. We all loop around
into my ass
into ourselves.
No, I think that's what's catching up with me in some, or maybe with him or with me about him. I don't know. Is watching the trailer for Death Stranding the first time, like the first Death Stranding, I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited for this. All the stuff that looks fun, you know, interesting and wild. And then I get through the game, I'm kind of like, oh my God, this was the most basic crap ever when you really boil down to what it was. Not to mention it was fairly predictable in some ways, but that doesn't really matter. So Death Stranding 2, all I'm hearing is, I'm just listening to basically a man, you know, farting into his own mouth at this point. And I'm just like, dude, I'm good. Maybe the game's going to be amazing. Maybe it's going to be fantastic. I don't know. But the whole visual of him having his head up his own ass is very appropriate.
And, it's like, if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't play Death Stranding, I considered it. But honestly, while I still respect the man, and the one thing that, like, I can't really bash him because... You know what I like in video games more than anything?
What's that?
Is like genuinely weird and innovative stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
And Death Stranding is a game that doesn't really look like any other game.
No, and the gameplay should be terrible, but I adored it. I really did.
I mean, I like it is a highly, highly detailed and high budget, like, indie concept.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Idea of, like, balancing your weight while going over, like, terrain and stuff and building, yeah. And like building bridges and transportation stuff, like, you could make all of that in like a $10 game. Yes. With like pixel graphics and still make it like kind of work
for sure. Maybe
even better.
But instead,
Norman Reedus is in it.
I mean, it might work better because it's not bogged down by the not like a story that doesn't matter.
But I really actually like that he's doing it and making something that's genuinely unique. But from a storytelling perspective, it's clear that he's at a point in his career where he can't be stopped.
No. And the truth is, Death Stranding 2 is going to come out, and I'm saying this stuff now, but on the release day, I'll probably be like, yeah, you know what, I'm kind of excited.
Oh, you're going to play it for sure. I have no doubt of this.
I'm kind of excited for this video game, and same with Scient or whatever they end up calling it. I'm sure that release day will come out, and I'll be like, yeah, you know what, I can see what this is about, and I'll complain if it's bad, and I'll be excited if it's good, but I'm still just going to, you know, huff his fart, just like him.
Yeah.
I can't. It's like you said. Because
you know what? Like, you're aware to some degree that you are huffing a fart, but then like while you're there, it's like, I don't know. It doesn't smell that bad. There's like something kind of sweet to it.
Yeah, like maybe Jar Jar Binks really could have been, you know, Dark Sidious, and it would have been awesome.
I don't think it's that bad.
No, me neither.
I don't think that's a step too far. We got to give him more credit than that.
I wish they had actually done that with Jar Jar Binks. It would have been cool.
It would actually have made it better. But like,
so, you know, but this,
oh. Those are the types of things that like Kojima just does. Cause
yeah.
Like, oh yeah, this guy was actually that guy who was actually this guy and in his arm. And like, didn't like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, didn't you have like the president of the United States in Death Stranding and like their middle name was America?
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah.
Like,
I don't remember the specifics, but that does sound correct.
Hang on. Someone has the middle name America. And this is supposed to be some sort of deep metaphor, but it's so, like, incredibly surface level.
Well, and that's sort of what the story of Death Stranding felt like to me, was that it was supposed to be this grandiose metaphor, but it was all very on the nose, very surface. And you know, this hunt for the greatest game of all time to look like a movie is not new. I sent you an ad from a GamePro magazine from the early 90s that's like the hottest graphics you've ever seen, introduces a new sense of reality you've never before seen on Super NES. Superb, like playing the movie and awestruck. Do you know what this is in reference to?
I do not.
It is in reference to the Super Nintendo version of The Rocketeer.
Oh my god! Oh my god, that's so much worse than I thought! I was running through, like, all of the movie games that I could think of, like, the blockbuster movie games, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, you thought maybe Terminator.
I was thinking Terminator. I was like, what, any other movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger was in? Is it Last Action Hero? Lawnmower Man? Like... Right,
yeah. No, it's The Rocketeer.
Like, maybe the worst of all of them.
So, maybe I've never played the game. Maybe it's a fantastic game. I have no idea.
It's not. The Rocketeer, like, most people didn't actually see the main gameplay of The Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Because the first level of The Rocketeer involves having to do, like, a barnyard like biplane race.
Oh my god.
That where you basically are just like flying around a couple of poles, and it's basically a NASCAR race, but you're
just
in the
air. Just like the movie.
And it is like so impossible to control that like nobody ever beat it. So I actually don't know as well what most of the Rocketeer game is like, because that first stage is ridiculous and impossible. And I assume most of it doesn't have to do with racing a biplane in a circle. So, also, the president's name is Bridget Strand.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's Bridget Strand. Yeah, that's right.
And also, let's just throw this out there. Sam Porter Bridges.
Yes. It's not on the
nose. Because he delivers things and he creates connections between people.
Yeah.
Porter, like a delivery person. Bridges, like connections.
I don't know what's worse, the name or you explaining the name.
No, the actual worst thing, is Kojima explaining the name.
Fuck, you're right. No, the actual worst thing is in that same magazine, GamePro gave Truck Rock 3 exploding heads and 2 excited heads.
That is pretty bad.
That's way worse.
That's like Chuck Rock remains one of the like bottom 10 games that we've played on this podcast.
You won't be disappointed. Move over, Rolling Stones. the real roots of rock and roll are here.
We are coming up on, like, in a couple months, we will be at 200 episodes of this podcast.
Wow.
Like, Chuck Rock is in, like, the bottom 5 or 10 games that we've played.
It's certainly the most memorable of the bad.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I guess it's like, there's like, memorably bad, and then there's forgettable bad. And we played a lot of forgettable bad.
Memorably bad is worse, because now it's stuck in your memory.
That's true.
It's way
worse. That's true. I can't unhear Unga Bunga. I can't.
Damn you, Chuck Rock.
You know what's forgettable bad?
Oh, what?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Not according to GamePro, it got 4 exploding heads and 1 excited head.
Well, that means it's worse than Chuck Rock. Or, wait, did you say 4 exploding heads?
Yeah, it's better. Well, maybe it's better, so that means it's... I thought you were making a meta joke about GamePro's rating scale.
No, I just misunderstood what you said.
Okay.
No, it sucks. I guess that kind of takes some of the steam out of the second half of the podcast, but it does suck. Come back after the break to see what we think about it. All right, so I have to ask, have you played this before?
Okay, first I want to say that part of GamePro's reviews for their games back in the day also had the size of the cart. So this was a 2-meg game, apparently. That's okay. I guess that's important for a rating scale.
So I'm more familiar with the number of megs on a Super Nintendo game. Mostly because when I started emulating them back in the 90s,
sure.
The emulator would actually list the number of megs on the ROM.
Oh, right, yeah.
So then I could see that, like, you know, there was a pretty close parallel between, like, cheaper, lower quality games having less megs and, like, you know, Chrono Trigger having, like, 32. Or wow. Something like that.
That's a bold claim. You know, they should have added the weight, too, and maybe the smell. That would have helped the review. Maybe the taste? Like future Switch games?
I'm not saying that it was across the board. I'm just saying that, like...
I know what you're saying.
You know, there was a correlation between the games that I knew to be, you know, sort of outstanding.
Yeah.
Where, like, oh, wow, that's like a 16 or a 32 megabit game. Whereas, like, something that was essentially arcade shovelware would be, like, 4.
Yeah, and I mean, we all know the first rule of scientific research is correlation equals causation. So about this game, my friend owned this, you know, Game Boy game, and I remember playing it at his house one time, and I remember getting to the part. So I remember playing it, and I remember climbing, like, you know how you could grab onto the pipe, and then you can shimmy your way across the pipe? I was like, well, that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
And then I played a bit more of that stage, turned it off, never played it again. Now, I love Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
I love Ninja Turtles as a kid. Way more, probably, right? I don't know.
Yeah. This has been established.
Right. And I didn't care about this game when I was a kid, when I should have liked it and been like, oh, I can't wait to play more of this. And now playing it today, it's so much worse. It is not a good video game. I will say it has some of the best, maybe possibly the best pause menu of all time, though.
The pizza time pause menu, like, was so good.
The bit crushed pizza time and you know, the turtle just lounging having a slice with really wonderful pause music, like different music during the pause screen. That is something to talk about.
So there is one thing that I need to correct. I called it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Rise of the Foot Clan. It is, in fact, Fall of the Foot Clan.
Oh, yes. Very true. Rise of the Foot Clan was the... No, this is like Back to the Sewers or something. We're playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Roman numerals 2, not to, you know, Mega Man it up here.
Oh, my God, you're right. Fall of the Foot Clan is the first one. We already played that.
We played Fall of the Foot Clan.
Oh, my God, they all run together.
This is Back from the Sewers. Well, that's because they're the first one and this one are very similar, except the first one. So the second one has awesome background art. It's, like, super pretty. But the character art looks like... I don't mean this in any way derogatory, but do you know how there's a certain look to some fan-made video games?
Yep.
That's what the sprites feel like for all the characters.
Yeah, like, no, I know exactly what you mean.
It has like a Zedette quality.
Yeah.
To the sprites.
Yeah.
Sprites are awful and they're way too big. Now,
you know what
it is?
You know what specifically? I'm glad you said that. You know what makes me think specifically of Zedette is the attack animation.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my God.
The attack animation is so flaccid. And it literally is like the sprite doesn't move at all, and the attack, the weapon just kind of flings out.
Yeah. Or swipes awkwardly in front of their face or something like that.
Or in Donatello's case, like, it just kind of looks like he's waggling his stick between his legs.
Yeah, 100%.
Because it comes out, like, right at his waist.
Yeah.
And it sort of, like, comes up from the bottom. But there's no back end of the stick.
No.
So it just kind of looks like he's got it between his legs and he's just like flipping it up like he's, you know, making an off-color joke.
I don't know. The game is super awful to play.
For the first stage or two, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I would agree that like the end of the But even then, the stages are just kind of long and boring.
The stages are long and boring.
And that's saying something when the whole game is 30 minutes.
Early on, they're manageable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It just felt like I was prepared to be like, okay, this is, you know, kind of a throwaway arcadey beat-em-up style, but it's on the Game Boy. So it's just like things come at you and you hit them and they fly away and you just walk to the right and it's fine. But for the first couple of stages, that's kind of manageable.
Yeah.
And then they start getting ambitious and it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, because the first few stages more or less kind of, they're very similar to the first Game Boy game, but with some added cool things like the shimming across the pipe.
Yeah.
One of the worst looking jump kicks I've ever seen in a video game.
Yeah.
The range on it is atrocious. There's a few times where I was just playing with rewinding time, seeing like, okay, how would I make this jump kick work in this instance? And it took a lot to get the kick to work. Mm-hmm. And then once you understand where the hitbox is, or like you have to have it, the leg out in front of you way before, but make sure the head of the enemy, that like the foot soldier that you're kicking, doesn't touch any other part of your leg. Otherwise you're going to take damage.
Right. Yes.
You might kill them, but they have hit priority unless you're in the specific spot. It's just unbelievably unfun to play.
This is why, like, a lot of games with a jump kick,
mm-hmm.
where you're expected to actually use it, the ones that feel good, they will either design a knockback so that the enemy, like, jumps back when you hit them.
Sure.
So you have time to get away from them. Or they will start flashing and you'll get like invincibility frames after you hit them. Or they just don't have touch of death at all.
Yeah.
Naturally a jump kick involves you just jumping into them. And so that doesn't work if they have touch of death, where like jumping into them means you take damage.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be some way to mitigate that. And this game just doesn't do any of those things.
You know, I need to remedy something I said. I said I've never followed a whole Let's Play, right? But I've watched bits and pieces of one. So there's this person that I follow on YouTube who has, he plays old obscure games. And he has a very small channel, like, you know, 30 or 40 subscribers or something.
Okay.
But a few days ago, he uploaded one for an NES game called Kickmaster. And it's just a game where all you do is kick stuff. Like,
okay.
It's just kicking everything. And there's, like, RPG elements. Like, when you kill something, three different items pop up and you get them. And then that's how you level up, kind of Link 2 style
weird
way. I was like, well, this sounds interesting. But it's all about kicking. And
sure.
I was like, wow, this kicking is cool. It looks pretty neat. And then you think about kicking in this game and you're just like, just stop. Just stop. The kick in the Turtles game is usually so rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sure, it doesn't do a lot of damage, but it feels good. There's usually different, like, there's two different types depending on how you're pressing it or if you're pressing any directional inputs while kicking. But this, I was so sad about the kick in this game. And then they added, like, a cool Mega Man slide. Also terrible.
Yeah, I was really excited about it because it took me most of the game to realize that I had it. And then it mostly came out accidentally.
Yeah, right.
Because the way that you get it, the way that you do it is by hitting the A and B buttons at the same time, which is your jump and attack buttons. But it's like, if you want to do a jump kick, you do jump and then attack.
Yeah.
But then if you hit, if you want to do a, if you want to do a sliding kick on the ground, then you hit jump and attack.
Yeah.
But and then faster. You do
like, and it's like the slide animation is just the kick animation where you're sort of like seated on your butt.
Yep.
But you're, you know, your torso is perfectly straight and you just kind of slide across the floor in a really awkward way that, again, almost makes it impossible to dodge the things that you're trying to dodge unless you know, unless you already know ahead of time, oh, I need to dodge immediately.
Uh-huh.
It's, yep. It's bad.
Do you want to hear something that, given our, given what we've been going through with Mega Man, will just make you absolutely batty insane?
What?
U.S., North America.
Yes.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Back from the Sewers.
Oh, okay, yes.
Europe, Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles 2, Back from the Sewers.
Sure.
Japan, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Arabic numeral, not Roman numeral.
Son of a bitch! Well, wait, is Fall of the Foot Clan in Japan just... Is it just called Teenage Mutant? Do they have like a one in front of it, or is it just Turtles then?
Excellent
like,
question. In Japan, the Fall of the Foot Clan is just called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh my god. I wonder if the third game does the same thing or if it adds like a subtitle to it. Like, video games across borders is just sometimes goofy.
Especially in this era.
Yeah, true.
Especially in this era.
I would say almost exclusively, because now things are just named what they are.
So the third one for Game Boy, right?
Yeah.
The third one for Game Boy is called Radical Rescue.
Yes.
So, North America, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Radical Rescue. Europe, Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles 3, Radical Rescue. Japan, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, again, Arabic numeral, not Roman numeral like it is in North America and Europe. Turtles Kiki Ipatsu. I don't know what that translates to.
I don't have a clue. But I'm glad it's all different.
So 1, 2, and then 3 with the subtitle.
That is so goofy. If you Turtles type that in,
Crisis Shot.
I was going to say, can you please Google translate that? Crisis Shot. I mean, that makes it sound pretty cool.
That's actually way better than Radical Rescue.
Radical Rescue fits like that, you know, that aesthetic. But Crisis Shot is so Japanese.
It's extremely Japanese. And just in case you thought that was just a Wikipedia thing, here's the box art.
Oh. Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. And oh my god, what's even more confusing is the box art for this is that's like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade box art.
Is like, it?
Well, it's very similar to the TMNT arcade. If you look at here, I'll send you.
I mean, that is all deeply confusing because the arcade game is just called TMNT 2.
Look, there's the NES TMNT 2 with the arcade game.
Oh, yeah, that they're all in the same poses.
It's the same art.
The exact same poses. They just, like, move them around a little bit, and they're not crashing out of a brick wall.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, we loved crashing things through brick walls in the 90s, didn't we?
I mean, it's kind of cool.
It looks good, but, like, every single toy commercial had to break through some kind of wall.
I mean, hell, the Kool-Aid Man did it before then.
Yeah, but, like, it was oversaturated. In the 90s.
Because it's like, well, we got this brick wall. Brick walls, they're indestructible. Nothing can stop them except for your favorite cartoon characters.
Right.
Busting through.
So then it's like, why do we even have a brick wall here if not to just break through it?
Yeah, basically. I'm surprised. You know, we really need a game where that is what you do.
There is.
We need more video games just breaking through brick walls. But you have to do like an action pose while you do it.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Well, yeah. You gotta add something extra to it. You know, the music in this game is good. I like the music for the most part. I mean, good maybe is a strong word, but it's I enjoyed the music, especially considering it's a Game Boy game.
Do you know who did the music?
I don't have a clue, actually.
It's Michiru Yamane.
Wait, why do I know that name?
1 second.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no. I'm wrong. I thought that was the case because I was originally looking at the first one.
Oh.
Michiru Yamane did the music for Fall of the Foot Clan.
Okay. Okay.
Not for this one. There's two composers on this game. One of them scored Advent Children. That's for those unaware, that's Final Fantasy VII Advent Children.
Oh yeah. And they did a bunch of stuff for the remake as well, which, by the way, the Final Fantasy VII remake has some fantastic music. Oh,
yeah,
wow, the people that did the music for this. Oh, Yamane did a lot of Castlevania stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. And, okay, that makes sense. Wow, God, the composers on this game worked on some pretty good shit on both of these games.
Oh, wow, yeah.
They're part of the Black Mages.
Yes.
That's super cool.
They worked on Chrono Trigger, but only for the PlayStation version that everyone hates.
Yeah, but the music was good in it. The people hated it because of the load times.
That's true.
The load times were just outrageous, and everything else was great. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an easy-to-please individual when it comes to certain franchises.
No, I think you're fine. I think that's... This person actually, I don't know if you just said that, but they did work on the 7 remake.
Yeah, and 7 remake, even if you should, if you're ever just want some music, like some background music, turn on the 7 remake album, because it is unbelievably good. It doesn't matter. I remember reading a comment talking about how much they love the music, and they're like, I've never played the game, I don't want to play the game, but I listen to the soundtrack anytime I'm playing something else that doesn't have good music.
You know, I'm at about 92 hours in Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
Okay.
And I don't feel like I'm anywhere close to done. But I am at least at the point where I'm starting to think about what I might play after it.
Yeah.
Like on stream. And I'm not saying that I'm going to play FF7 Remake on stream.
But you're not saying you're not.
But I might play it. I don't like having like a bunch of long RPGs going at the same time. And I'm probably going to start playing Persona 3.
That makes sense.
Fairly soon. But it is like... I'm starting to get a little bit swept up into the Rebirth hype. I'm also reaching a point where, like, damn, I might finally buy a PS5.
I mean, you might as well wait. PS6 is coming out. It's already the end of the sixth year or whatever.
They've started talking about, like, oh, the PS5s are starting to slow down. And I'm like, that to me says price cut.
Yeah, there's going to be, I bet you there's a price drop. That's when I would, you've waited this long, you might as well wait a little bit longer.
The reason it's coming up now is because there's a bunch of stuff coming out that is, if not PS5 exclusive. Because funny enough, a lot of the stuff that I'm looking to play is also coming out on PS4. But I'm like, I feel equally weird about, like, I don't feel like I should buy a new game for PS4 in 2024.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm signing on for, like, you know, 90-second load times between every section, between, like, every screen transition if I
It depends
that.
On if it's also being released on Switch.
It's not.
So if it's not also being released on Switch, then I would say don't do it.
Yeah, Unicorn Overlord, the new VanillaWare game. The one that follows up 13 Sentinels.
Oh, that's coming out on Switch.
Is it?
Yeah, I have the collector's edition that I don't ever pre-ordered on Switch because I don't know why I got the Switch version, but it has the it came with a card game. So I was like,
it is coming out on Switch.
I want a card game.
I might just be thinking of Persona 3.
Yeah, that is not on Switch.
That's not on Switch, but it is on PS4. And it's also PC, but it, like, it's weird getting it on PC because the PC's in my bedroom, right?
Yeah, no, it's not the same kind of thing. It's a different vibe. My computer is right next to my console, and there are times where it's like, no, I want this one on console. Because
there are games that I like to play in my room at my computer in my gaming space.
Yeah.
And then there are games that I like to play with Jesse on the couch in the living room.
Yeah.
And Persona 3 is going to be one of those games that is going to be like couch, living room, play together.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I've gone from like zero interest at all, and I don't understand why we'd even talk about it in terms of buying a PS5, to like, well, maybe I'm closer to thinking about it now.
I will say the Final Fantasy VII game I think would make for a fun streaming game, only because the voice acting is good, so you don't have to like read a bunch of stuff. It's pretty action-packed, and it's broken up into chapters, if you didn't know that. So it makes for good like starting and stopping points for streams and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's good.
It would.
And because it's not a Like a Dragon game, I don't have to stretch the runtime to 150 hours so that I can do everything.
No, I just replayed the whole thing and then the Yuffie side quest stuff in like 47 hours, I think. And that was with leaving it paused and, you know, kind of just messing around with a lot of stuff.
I think that like what makes the most sense to me,
yeah,
is to wait. Like, now that I've waited this long, it's like, okay, they're already giving Remake out as like a pre-order bonus to get Rebirth, right? Mm-hmm. So technically you can get both of them bundled in together already.
Yeah, it's the same price.
But if I wait like another 6 months, I bet I can still get both of them, but for like $30 or $40.
Yeah, so the right now the pricing is it's like $90 to get both games at once. And they say, well, go up to $120, but then probably by Thanksgiving or something like that.
Right.
The double pack will be at least back to the price that it was at launch and probably less.
So we're going to be at a point where I can basically get both games for like, you know, 50 60, or 60 bucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It will take me so long to get through them that by the time the third game is ready to come out, I might actually be through them.
Listen, it will be wild if the third game is like a PS6 game and to replay Final Fantasy VII, you would have theoretically needed to own three different consoles.
at which point they will just remaster all of them again to play on the PS6, which is kind of what I've been expecting all along, because it's like by the time they're actually done with this shit, there's going to be another new console and they're going to release a new version of it that runs better on the new console. So I'll just get that one.
Or it'll be some Frankenstein stitched together monster where it's all three games is one, like a seamless transition between all three or something like that.
That would actually be incredible.
Like a 300 gigabyte download.
And was the thing that I wanted in the first place. But like, I didn't realize that they were going to be doing it episodically until like a month before it came out. And that's when I went from like day one purchase to like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah. You know, I was down on it at first, and I was even down on the story in Seven when I, like, the second I got to the credits, I was kind of like, eh. And then I thought about it a bit and I was like, no, this is cool. I'm really glad they're doing it this way.
It allowed, like, I understand it. And like in retrospect, it's like it gives them more time to like to flesh out individual parts of it.
Sure.
And focus on, you know, give more characterization to some characters that were supposed to be important but didn't get enough screen time.
Or characters that were dead now don't have to be dead, so they can do different stuff with them. And there's all kinds of cool things like that.
Yeah. So there's I understand that they're like doing more with each location and with each moment. And that's why it's sort of expanding. And if they had actually released it all at once, it would have been too big.
Yeah.
In terms of like capacity, but also like we would still be sitting here wondering when FF7 Remake is coming out.
They would have gone bankrupt. Yeah. Right? There would have been a Spirits Within issue. there's not an Enix to bail them out.
And then when it did come out, it would have been like, what the hell, like how are we supposed to even handle this 250 hour RPG?
Yeah, true, exactly. And it's kind of, so it's like I replayed the last one, and then I'm playing the second one. I played the demo. I like the demo. I don't know. I think so. I am the wrong person to be asking because my glasses are extremely rose tinted when I think about Final Fantasy VII.
That's so fair, and it's important to recognize that.
And I am under no illusion that it's the greatest game of all time or anything like that. It just happens to be the most. It happens to be one of the most, you know, influential games or important games or like milestones or you know, whatever in my life. So getting more of it at this point is just like, yeah, this is cool. I'm excited to have more of it. However, whatever that ends up meaning.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's sort of interesting when you think about games that you want to play in different settings, right? Like, you know, you're thinking about Persona 3 as a couch co-op game. Or not couch co-op, but like you're playing it on the sofa with Jesse hanging out. And then you have games like Infinite Dragon or Infinite Wealth.
Infinite Dragon is pretty good.
Well, where it's a game that you want Jesse to experience parts of, but she can experience it, you know, through the stream, or you can talk to her about it or that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then you have games like Back from the Sewers, which nobody needs to experience.
I forgot we were even supposed to be talking about it because that's how little I care about it.
Listen to the pause menu music, or at least press pause. Just pizza time.
By far the most fun that I had with the game was seeing the Foot Clan soldiers who were just inexplicably holding a pizza above their heads.
Yeah, like a peace offering.
Like they're like, and not even like generally not even moving.
No, they're like, standing
still.
Like,
they literally are just a, they are literally just a power-up container.
But they hurt you, so it's really bad. Like, just the word, imagine if, like, the question mark blocks also electrocuted you.
And again, like, so what do you do? Okay, well, they die in one hit, so you should be able to just jump kick into them.
As long as you don't hit them with any other part than the tip of your foot.
Right. Like, most of the time, there is an allowance for, like, hey, you're in a jump kick animation, so it covers, like, the bottom of your sprite.
No.
Mm-hmm. You cannot jump down on top of something in a jump kick. You will just get hit.
It is just directly your ass or the bottom of your legs, because you just, your jump kick is just your legs straight in front of you.
Yes.
It's in a sitting position, though. Not, like, straight in front of you like you're doing, like, a flying kick with both feet out or something.
So I did eventually find an equilibrium where, like, I was able to sort of figure out how to use it. But it was the Cuso Grande skills coming in where it's like, all right, Absolutely. This is the specific way to use this specific power.
And God forbid there's a something in your way when you, like, there's one particular foot soldier that gets stuck in my head that is holding pizza, but there's two flame spouts that are really close
exactly
to each other.
That's exactly what I'm thinking about. And it's I
had one hit left, and I hit him, I jumped, and I hit, I got the pizza, I thought, but I also hit him with my crotch, and I guess the damage hit first, and so I didn't get the pizza, and I lost the turtle. I was like, God, this game sucks so much.
And the turtle just dies on top of the pizza.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I literally did the exact same thing in the exact same spot. The exact same thing.
And what was with that stage in the air? With that, like, you couldn't actually fall because the stage looped?
Yes.
And you just got to go right? And it's so freaking long. It's so
way
boring.
It's so long that I feel like I feel very confident that they just looped the same, like, three or four platforms, like, three times.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, and it starts with such promise. Because
it's
really
cool.
Like, you're hanging onto the blimp. Master Splinter is flying it, which I didn't even know that was a thing that ever happened. And I was like, oh, man, are they going to do, like, a flying stage?
The first thing that I thought, there is several, in fact, stages in Contra games. I think I'm thinking of Contra 3, in which you are, but I think they do it in Contra 4 as well. And other games. It happens a lot. Maybe Hardcore. I don't know.
Probably.
There's one where you're like, you're holding on to the missile.
Yeah.
Flying through the air.
It's so cool.
And you have to, like, grapple onto other missiles before they explode.
Yep.
And it's this awesome, like, it's really difficult, but it is, you're constantly jumping between, like, and you're not standing on them. You're like grappling onto them, holding on with one hand, gun in the other hand.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, oh my God, are we going to do a Contra missile stage? And it's like, no, you just jump off of that thing onto these little like Super Mario 3 airship platoon platforms.
Yeah.
And then the problem with it is, like, I initially was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, it loops up, it loops down, it kind of, like, infinitely vertically scrolls. But then you realize that, like, there's not actually that much scrolling, and you're really kind of just looping the same, like, maybe 1.5 screen spaces.
Yep.
And also, your sprite is so big that you can't see what's above or below you, and it's always something that hurts you.
Yeah, I will say the flippy animation is pretty good.
The flippy animation is good. When you, it's, like, grapple onto something and, like, flip up on top of,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like, that feels good.
Yes, I agree with that. Everything else about that level sucked, and that was kind of the turning point where I started to be like, oh, this game is bad. Because it was, like, kind of mediocre okay before that.
Sure.
And then that stage sucked, and then everything else after that was worse.
I just gotta say, thank God that the final fight with Krang is so easy.
So easy.
Like, they knew. So, you know, you have unlimited continues in this game. And according to GamePro, there's multiple endings, but I couldn't find any evidence of that on the internet.
Oh, to hell with that.
I looked around and I don't see multiple endings because I guess there's difficulty between easy, you know, normal and hard.
Sure.
But the internet does not, I don't know, maybe I just did a poor job of searching because I didn't look that hard. And I just kind of looked at Video Game Museum, which usually has a lot of ending stuff. But so they knew that they gave you unlimited continues because, like, yeah, some parts of this are crap and we're going to be generous in that regard. And then they get to the final boss and they're like, okay, we're definitely going to be generous because this stage was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. It, like, unlimited continues is fine. But, like, I did not want to do that stage again. It's so long, and it's so hard, and it's not fun.
No.
It's, like, it's one of those games that thinks that difficulty is, like, giving you challenges that you're not equipped to deal with.
Yeah, right.
And that's not good difficulty. Good difficulty is giving you challenges that push you to, like, the very limits of your ability, not giving you stuff that, like, swarms in from an angle you're not able to attack from.
Yeah, it's the problem in a game where they just, well, this is going to be harder, so we're going to give the, you know, we're going to add a zero to the health of the enemies.
Yeah, that too.
And you're like, ugh, that's not fun.
Like, you know, the little, like, swarmy robot, like, flying robot things.
Yeah, there's the Mausers.
Like, that, like, fly directly at you and, like, you would think that, like, a good jump kick will take care of them, except that the jump kick doesn't work, and I think maybe doesn't kill them in one hit.
The jump kick might not. Your weapon attack does. I feel like your jump kick does, but I think it's hard to hit it right.
It may just be that it's just hard to actually hit them in the right spot before they hit you.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why it feels like they don't die in one hit, but, like, it still sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's one of those instances where you just feel like the game is giving you challenges that it doesn't expect you to have the tools to deal with.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in the airship stage where it's like, okay, I have to fall here because I can't make the jump over to the next thing. So the only choice that I have is to fall down onto a foot soldier I can't see, or to jump up into a foot soldier I can't see.
Yeah, basically.
Those are the literal only options. Like, and they are actually the same foot soldier. Because you're jumping to the same platform. It's just, are you jumping
underneath it, or are you below it?
Yeah, are you above it or below it? Because the screen loops. It's the same thing. So it's literally like you're gonna get hit by this thing. So eventually you just have to get to the point where it's like, all right, just try to go through it as quickly as possible because, like, it's not built for you to avoid damage.
And, you know, the game has some kind of neat ideas. So after the turtle dies, they go to jail. And then once you finish the stage... you have the chance to break them out of jail. And this, now the fight is terrible. The idea of the fight's really cool, though, because rather than having life, because it is a bonus stage and they wouldn't want to kill your turtle that you just beat the stage with, instead of taking damage, the timer just goes down when you get hit. I think that's a really neat idea.
Liked it too.
Yeah, it's just that the fight's not fun. The problem is that most of the fights boil down to having to use your jump kick, and the jump kick sucks.
Yes.
And that's the biggest problem in terms of the boss combat, is you're never going to just fight the bosses. And I know that's true in most beat-em-ups. There's almost always some dumb thing you have to do because they're designed around that.
There's always the cheese strat where it's like punch, punch, stop, punch, punch, stop, punch, punch, stop to keep them in like a
stun lock.
A stun loop. Yeah.
But so I like the idea of those rescue stages where you're fighting the robot police officer. I'm not really sure why they're getting arrested and not just murdered, but whatever. The manual is not nearly as cool as the first Game Boy game. There's no Radical Band of Punk Rumblers.
I forgot about the Radical Band of Punk Rumblers. Well, I didn't, but I forgot it was from that game specifically.
So that was really disheartening to me. I know that the police officer's name is like Rex or something, but I don't understand. They don't. There's no rhyme or reason for why the turtles die and then they just get put into robot prison.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
They're
knocked
out.
The problem with
that is that, like, the hitbox where you can actually hit him is so small.
Yeah.
But the attacks are impossible. You have to be, like, right up inside him because none of the attacks have any range. Even Donatello has, like, crappy range.
Yeah.
So you have to be right next to them. But then, like, every other attack that they do involves him, like, skipping halfway across the stage to the middle. Yeah. Way faster than you can avoid him.
Basically, what you have to do is, with the jump kick, you have a lot of control while you're jump kicking, which is nice if the jump kick wasn't terrible.
Right.
So you're supposed to, like, do a jump kick where you're hitting him and then pulling away, then jumping and hitting him and pulling away. Like,
right.
I didn't do it. I watched a video because I was curious. It wasn't even a video, like, on YouTube. The game actually has tips, like, here's how you do this stuff, like, on the Cowabunga.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, the Cowabunga collection's fantastic.
How you played it.
Yeah, so that's why I had the rewind feature that I was messing with during the jump kick. I played most of the game without it because I just wanted to play the game, and I was excited to play it, and then I was like, I'm not excited to play this, but I will just, I'll suffer through it how you're supposed to suffer through it.
Yeah.
But the video made it look easy, and I was like, oh, this is really easy once you understand what you're supposed to do, which is just kind of utilize the floaty, crappy jump. Well, it's a cool jump kick in terms of floatiness and control, but it sucks because, as we've talked about, the jump kick just kind of sucks.
The jump in the game in general is very floaty.
Yeah.
Which actually works okay for it.
Yeah, most of the time, yeah.
Like, I don't actually hate the jump. The jump kick is really difficult to use, but I like that the jump gives you basically full control. The game would be a lot worse without that, and that's saying something.
Yeah, that is saying something. My favorite takeaway from all of this is the pause menu music and the pizza time, like all of the Bit Crush sound effects in the game. Great.
Yep.
Very enjoyable. And I love that the musician was the guitarist, the main guitarist for Black
for
Mages.
The Black Mages, yeah.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I started saying this before, and then we sort of derailed into how funny it was that they're just foot soldiers standing there with pizza.
Yeah.
But, like, my literal favorite thing about this entire game was beating one of the Foot Clan holding pizza and then having the pizza show up and then pausing the game so it would say pizza time and then unpausing it and picking up the pizza.
Every single time.
Every time I was able to do it. That was the literal most fun I had with the game.
Okay, this would be not normal, but for the outro music, can we just have Bit Crush sounds of pizza time?
Yes. Or awesome. Maybe the opening.
Fair. I mean, we can definitely the opening. You know, that should have been a sign. They showed the Konami logo, but it didn't make the Konami sound effect.
I was so mad about that because they did the Konami logo and they didn't get the whole like...
it's like you expect it and it's not there. You're like, huh?
And then the like 10 seconds after that, they have like Bit Crushed Cowabunga. And I'm like, oh.
They could have done it.
They could Bit Crush a voice line into the game, but they couldn't give me the Konami sound. And then it just went downhill from there.